From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Joshua Johnson, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Forget about the so-called fiscal cliff for a minute. Let's talk about something that should really mean a lot to you in 2013. You. What do you want out of the new year? Despite all the fear of economic calamity and political gridlock, many of us still have hope for deeper meaning, purpose, and fulfillment in the year to come. How about you? In this hour, we'll talk to three experts with different perspectives on the search for the things that make life worth living. We'll take your questions and thoughts, and we welcome your insights on how to make 2013 the best year ever. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. Good morning. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News, sitting in for Michael Krasny. There's something about the holidays that can make you think about what's meaningful in life. Celebrating with family and friends clarifies what's really important. Now, a new year is less than 14 hours away, and the holiday spirit is slowly fading. But the need for meaning and clarity still remains in the year to come. Forget about that New Year's resolution to lose 20 pounds. What about gaining something deeper? What is your purpose for 2013? How would you like to make the new year not only memorable, but meaningful? In this hour of Forum, we'll discuss the search for meaning in 2013, and we look forward to hearing your hopes for the new year and your questions on how to make your deeper resolutions come true. Joining us in studio are Philip Moffitt, a teacher of Buddhist meditation and the founder of the Life Balance Institute in Marin County. His new book is called Emotional Chaos to Clarity: How to Live More Skillfully, Make Better Decisions, and Find Purpose in Life. Moffitt previously ran Esquire magazine, saving it from collapse before selling it to pursue his spiritual journey. Mr. Moffitt, welcome to Forum.
Glad to be here.
The very Reverend Dr. Jane Shaw is the dean of San Francisco's Grace Cathedral. Her books include A Practical Christianity, Meditations for the Season of Lent. Dr. Shaw, good morning.
Thank you. Hello.
And Dacher Keltner is a psychology professor at the University of California, Berkeley. He's co-founder of the Greater Good Science Center, a research facility focused on meaning and humanity through the lens of sociology and even neuroscience. His books include Born to Be Good: The Science of a Meaningful Life. Professor Keltner, welcome.
It's great to be with you, Joshua.
Before we begin, a caveat. We dive this hour into a topic that can raise the blood pressure of many people. Spirituality and religion are touchy, especially since one-fifth of Americans now say they have no religious affiliation. So to be clear, if you hear something in this hour that contradicts your beliefs, rubs you wrong, or that you just flat-out disagree with, it's okay. You're more than welcome to share your perspectives and be part of the conversation when we open the phones in just a few minutes. So I thank you in advance for your tolerance. Let's dive in with the conversation about 2013. I think it'd be a good way to go around the room to see if any of you have some personal or meaningful ambitions for the year to come. Maybe you don't make those kinds of New Year's resolutions, goals for a reason, and if so, I'd love to know what that is. But let's start with you, Dr. Shaw, and we'll work our way around. What are your spiritual hopes for 2013, your personal goals for the new year?
Oh, to keep looking outward, to keep engaging with the community. I think a lot of New Year's resolutions tend to be rather inwardly focused, and then we get frustrated when we don't achieve them. And if we engage with others, if we do something for others, it's much more fulfilling. So I hope I'll keep doing that.
Professor Keltner, what about you?
I'm with Jane. Evolution has crafted some tendencies in human nature that make us cooperate and be compassionate and sympathetic, and I'm going to try to practice those to the best of my abilities.
Philip Moffitt, what about you?
Well, my perspective is slightly different because I'm interested in the balance of the inner and the outer, and without the growth in the inner, the outer doesn't really come into its full blossoming.
So it sounds like all three of your goals for the new year have to do in some way with balance, striking a better balance, whether it's your kind of relationship with the inner, the outer, Philip Moffitt, or for you, Professor Keltner and Dr. Shaw, in terms of your relationship with yourself and humanity. That issue of balance, does that seem to be, as you look at people, Dr. Shaw, on their spiritual journeys, that seems to be a really big one.
Absolutely. I would totally agree with Philip that you have to have a balance between the inner and the outer. And obviously, in Christianity, we have these particular seasons. So in some ways, it's Lent, which comes a little later. It comes in February and March for us, where we think about that kind of sense of self-examination, and out of that turn outward, look towards God, as we would understand God, and towards others. So I always think of Lent as a rather positive season, because it's that moment where you sort of recalibrate that dynamic between the inner and the outer.
All right, let's dive into the conversation about how to set up for a good 2013. As I do that, of course, we welcome your questions and thoughts and insights. I don't think any one of us has all the answers, certainly not me. And I look forward to hearing what you are thinking about 2013. Maybe there are areas that you could use a little insight on, or maybe you know something that has worked for you that could work for others. Please do call us. The number is 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Feel free to email us. The address is forum@kqed.org. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/KQED Forum, and send us a tweet. We are at KQED Forum. I know this is a very kind of touchy-feely topic. I know people always talk about the spirit and doing great things and just being communing more with the world. And personally, I'm a very spiritual person, but I don't do that touchy-feely thing well. Like I need something practical. So for people like me who are hard-bitten and practical, and maybe, you know, very skeptical, trying not to be cynical, especially in the face of what we just discussed for the last hour, maybe give me a good first step. For anyone who's just wit's end, tearing their hair out, that's it, I'm disgusted, 2013's got to be a brand new year. What's the best first place to start? For anyone who feels like, I can't live the next year the way I lived the last year. Philip, what do you think would be a good first place to start?
Well, in Buddhist psychology, it starts with mindfulness of what's true now.
Define mindfulness.
So mindfulness is staying present with what you're feeling or experiencing in the body, in your emotions, in your thought pattern. Whatever's going on right now, you stay present for it in a non-objecting way. So usually when we have some emotion that we don't like, we then have a second or third emotion immediately after it. So we don't stay present with what's really happening. We react over and over again. So it's a series of reactions rather than having a deeper basis for meeting life.
So you have a moment, just to make sure I fully understand, you have a moment where you're upset over something, and the fact that you're upset makes you disgusted that you're upset again, and the fact that you're disgusted over being upset makes you feel pessimistic
You've
over the fact that you're
disgusted.
You've got it already. And it's just this feedback loop.
Yes. So starting with this starting where you are, this is one of the principles. We start where we are. So this is what's true right now. And then having compassion towards where you are right now. So if you're feeling as though that your life is sort of gone astray, or there's something that's really bothering you, or you're facing a health challenge this year, this is really tough.
So you kind of have to almost – it's almost like being able to look at yourself under a microscope with a little distance.
With a distance, but from within the experience. This is one of these things that often gets misunderstood about Buddhism, is the experience, it's knowing it within the experience. So it's knowing that your sadness within the sadness, but not identifying with it. Not saying, it should be some other way, but right now what I experience is sadness and it's like this. And that's why the compassion is real and not self-pity or denial.
Professor Keltner, what do we know about the way that we view our own experiences as we move toward places of reaching out, of compassion, of empathy, of human social behaviors? In those first few steps, when we began to come out of ourselves, what do we actually do sociologically, physically, physiologically? How does the body work in that regard?
Well, that's a great question, Joshua. And you know, Charles Darwin actually a long time ago argued that for very sensible reasons that if you want to have a healthy 2013, you might want to rely on one of the strongest instincts that humans have evolved, which is sympathy and compassion, for very sensible reasons. And after 50 years of studying stress and anger and all the physiological correlates of those interesting states, scientists are starting to ask this question of what does the body do? What does the mind do? What does the brain do when we're being generous and we're acting in the service of others? And we are learning this incredible story about very old regions of the brain called the periaqueductal gray are activated when we see people suffer. It's a mammalian part of the nervous system that helps us take care of others. That part of the brain is linked up to oxytocin networks. And oxytocin is this incredible neuropeptide that helps us be generous and empathize and take care of others. That then triggers activation in a bundle of nerves we study over at UC Berkeley called the vagus nerve, which is this mammalian bundle of nerves that slows your heart rate, helps you look at people in the eyes through stimulating muscles in your neck, and it seems to be engaged by the suffering of others. And what that tells us is we have this incredible neurophysiology that people have been writing about for 2,500 years in the great traditions of thought that helps us connect.
So we really are wired to care about ourselves and about others. There
yeah.
are physical impacts of that.
Absolutely. And health benefits and community benefits as well.
What about you, Dr. Shaw, in terms of the first steps for someone who says, can't do 2013 the way I did 2012, something has to change. Good first step.
Yeah, well, from a Christian point of view, I think one would want to say that you don't have to do it all yourself. There is a sense in which you give over things to God, and this amazing thing happens and surprises you, which is called grace in the Christian tradition, which helps you, right? So that's the first thing. It's not all within our control and willpower. I would absolutely agree with the things that our other two speakers have been saying about being compassionate, being present to yourself in that moment. In the Christian tradition, that would be about having a regular prayer life in which you both reflect on your own life and pray for others. And that being regular is part of the key, that through the sheer discipline, you get a kind of freedom. I mean, sometimes it's boring, you know, but out of that sometimes boring prayer life, you go through different highs and lows and come to various different places of understanding others better and understanding yourself better.
Just want to let everybody know who's listening to us. We are speaking to Dr. Jane Shaw from San Francisco's Grace Cathedral, Philip Moffitt, a teacher of Buddhist meditation and the founder of the Life Balance Institute in Marin County, and psychology professor Dacher Keltner of the University of California, Berkeley. Those of you who've been following along with us know that we have been following the coverage of the fiscal cliff from NPR. We are told that there's going to be live coverage of President Obama's address on the fiscal cliff, which I believe is at the bottom of the which is coming in at 10:30. So in just a few minutes, we're going to join NPR News for their coverage of the fiscal cliff. We hope to come back to this as fast as we can, provided that the coverage ends before the top of the hour. So those of you who are still trying to chime in on the conversation, please, please, please stay connected. In the event that we can't, please follow us online. Facebook.com/KQED Forum is our Facebook page. We want to continue this conversation. And feel free to tweet us. This topic is not going away in the new year, so feel free to tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. Just in case the president decides to cut us short, we better get to the point really, really quickly. Let's go around the table and see some of your other insights. I see a common bond between what you said, Dr. Shaw, and what you said, Mr. Moffitt, in terms of mindfulness, grace. I grew up in the Baptist church, and I was always taught that God was someone who looked beyond my fault to see my need. So it sounds like part of the first step is to clear away the judgment and say rationally, what's really at the bottom of this? Now, once you get to that point, does that mean that you have to leap into trying to fix it or strategize on it? Or like, how do you walk forward from there? Philip, when you realized that you needed to make some changes from your life at Esquire magazine, how did you start to make that change?
Well, when I realized that I was not going to find satisfaction in the worldly activities of the media world, I said that I'm going to just step out without any kind of plan, because I did not want to package myself. I did not want to package my life. I wanted to be available to life to come through me. This is called immanence, where one just is available. One is present with their heart and mind. And in that way, a kind of knowing arises as to what you want to do with your life.
So you
it's
just
scary,
decided,
but
you just decided to leap.
I just left and I sat and waited. Very difficult way to go about it.
We are getting ready to jump over to our coverage from NPR News. Let me give Dacher Keltner one more quick last word in terms of insights for people who have been able to make these changes successfully, to see them through, to make them stick for the new year. Any insights that you can share in our last few seconds?
Well, there's a great science on this, and what we're finding is that very simple ways of expressing gratitude to other people, or to think about the common suffering that humans face as we move through life, and to practice compassion, even a walk in the woods, and really feeling awe and beauty activates these parts of the nervous system that are better for health and well-being.
So maybe that's the insight that we take going forward, that before you start strategizing, maybe to begin with mindfulness, awareness, compassion, just looking outward, looking outward to try to find a few solutions might be the good first way to go. Let's take a quick phone call. We have a few more minutes before we go to NPR News coverage of the president. Sam in San Francisco, good morning. Hey, Sam, are you with us? We'll see if we can get Sam back a little bit later on. Let me ask you, Dr. Shaw, in terms of people's spiritual journeys. I know that a recent Pew survey showed that one-fifth of Americans now say they have no religious affiliation. How has Grace Cathedral dealt with trying to keep people on their path, spiritual or personal or otherwise, in an age when more people are drifting away from organized religion? Yeah.
The SBNRs, we call them, the spiritual but not religious.
Mm-hmm.
Well, two things I want to say. One, I think it's really important that you have companions on the way in this. There's a great tradition in Christianity of having a spiritual director or a soul friend, remembering that we're not always the best monitors of our own souls, yeah. Right? The other people need to be the ones who sometimes can look you in the
eye
and
say,
hey.
Yeah.
And that's one of the advantages of being part of a spiritual community with a group of people that share your spiritual values. Turning to cathedrals, Grace Cathedral in particular, interestingly, cathedrals are growing. They're one of the religious institutions that are growing at this moment. So in the last 10 years, cathedrals in general have grown by 3% a year. Grace Cathedral grew by 10% last year, actually. So, and I think that's for a number of reasons. Cathedrals are big. People can come in them and be anonymous if they wish to be, in the way you can't be always at your local parish church where people want you on the coffee rota instantly. They're often very beautiful. They're often gathering places for the arts. We had our first resident artist this year, Anna DeVere Smith, for music. And they're often places where a lot of different things happen. So we have 300 people doing yoga in the cathedral every Tuesday night.
Wow.
And we have a forum rather like this on Sunday mornings, and we have all kinds of things going on. So they are often gathering places for a community in the city, and I think Grace Cathedral is that. So they grow in different sorts of ways, and they have different levels of affiliation, and I feel we all feel pretty comfortable about that because I think that's how a cathedral can serve a city.
So just kind of the grandeur of it and the fact that you can get kind of lost in it.
I think that's one of the – yes, I have a friend who is a dean of a cathedral in Scotland, and he says cathedrals have big pillars behind which people can hide themselves when they need to.
Now, I wonder about that because I used to go to not a cathedral but a mega church. Mm. I actually went to two of them in South Florida where I'm from, and I got that feeling of being in kind of like church by Spielberg. It was massive. And they did, the grandeur and the concerts and it was like every moment was just church theater. But then when I left that experience can make it difficult to just, I had to resettle and go, okay, now where am I?
Yes.
Not in the context of all of this bigness, but where am I specifically, and I had to kind of learn to walk back into myself and being aware of that and rewriting my list of kind of where I want to be within my spiritual path. How do you, in terms of goal setting moving forward, because if the idea of this is to prepare 2013 to be better than 2012 and figure out what you want, once you get to the point where you say, okay, this is what I need out of my year, how do you start to turn that into action? Whether you're in a big cathedral or whether you are just meditating alone, how have you found success in terms of setting concrete steps to move forward?
Well, this is a point that I've thought about quite a bit, and I actually direct people to notice first the difference between goals, which is future-based, something that you want to achieve in the future sometime during this year, and your intention in this very moment as you speak or take an action. Because oftentimes these two are conflated in a way that causes people to get very unskillful in the things they say and the things they do. So you can say, okay, my goal this year is to be more healthy, to have a better diet and exercise. And yet in the very moment of a time when you're going to say something, do something, or eat something or not eat something, you don't actually bring your intention. You're not aware of what do I intend in this moment. Intentions are the values that you want to live every moment of your life around. They are your guiding core values. Goals are something you hope to accomplish. Goals may or may not happen, but you can choose. This is where you do have choice. You have choice in terms of your attitude in meeting this very moment. But if you don't know that, you don't exercise that choice, and you tend to get lost.
So you have to kind of learn how to knit the short term and the long term together.
And the core values don't change based on your goals. So whether it's a health goal or an inner goal of your spiritual life or how you want to be as a parent, that you will use different skillful means for those different goals. But the values that you employ moment to moment, every step you take on climbing the mountain of that goal, are always based on these core values. And again, this is what's so often overlooked.
We only have a few minutes left in our conversation because of the president's address about the fiscal cliff. But I do want to go to one quick call from Lee in Berkeley. Lee, good morning. Hey, Lee, can you hear me? I think the phone company doesn't want anybody to reach their spiritual goals today. I think they're conspiring against us.
Can I ask Philip a question then?
You know, we will deal with you on our own due time, phone company. But we'll continue the conversation online, definitely. We do have about 3 minutes left for us to move forward in our conversation before we have to give it over to President Obama regarding the fiscal cliff. Professor Keltner, in terms of what Mr. Moffitt has said in terms of goals versus intentions, are there ways for us to make use of the hardwiring we have in our bodies? I mean, we're hardwired to care. We have neurochemicals like oxytocin and portions of the brain like the vagus nerve that are designed to further these human social aims of ours. Can we use those to our advantage as we move forward?
Well, definitely. And I really like Philip's idea about intention. And there's a really rich, vibrant science that is engaging people in specific intentions and looking at whether it benefits them in terms of how long they live, the quality of their relationships to partners and children. And what we're finding is you can use this neurophysiology that evolution has provided us to lead more meaningful lives. A very simple one that all the great ethical spiritual traditions talk about is breathing, right? Just the right pattern of breath, deep exhalations actually calm stress-related physiology. Another one that scientists have been really interested in is self-compassion, right? And just setting your intention in a moment to be kind to yourself, to realize that humans fail, has all of these really wonderful benefits. You know, there are 10 or 12 techniques. We write about them at the Greater Good Science Center that you can put into play January 1.
First thing, as soon as the new year begins. Let me read a few online comments as our time runs out. One of our listeners from Oakland writes, I integrate New Year's resolutions with my Lenten discipline. It involves a lot of journaling, which I start at this time of year. Lent became much deeper for me when my church and my minister turned it into a three-pronged discipline, which is called positive self-denial. The three-pronged Lenten discipline is 1, giving up something, 2, adding something to my life during Lent, and 3, almsgiving to a charity, a person, or a cause of choice. Ed writes from the web, I think that non-religious people like me need to make a special effort to demonstrate by our example that we can be a moral force for good without requiring supernatural prodding. Thanks to those of you who wrote to us online. Apologies to those of you who called us on the phones, but we appreciate your being willing to take part in our conversation with Philip Moffitt of the Life Balance Institute in Marin County. Philip, I appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
Dr. Keltner, psychology professor at the University of California, Berkeley, and co-founder of the Greater Good Science Center. Professor, thanks very much.
Thanks, Joshua.
And the very Reverend Dr. Jane Shaw, the Dean of San Francisco's Grace Cathedral. Dr. Shaw, much appreciated. Thank you very much.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Vinnie Tong, and Suki Lewis. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Howard Gelman. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Please do stay tuned for coverage from NPR News of the President's address regarding the fiscal cliff. And there's more ahead on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Joshua Johnson, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening, and may 2013 be your best year ever.